based on a caste or class system than anything in India ever was, and for that matter still is. Please put aside the idea that these things cannot happen in America. How often I hear this delusion, how often I hear this said, but this is America and we have a constitution. You can forget that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to have to be so blunt, but the truth is sometimes not pleasant and always a dangerous commodity. The United States has been under a deadly and far-reaching attack since the 1930s, which most of us are totally unaware of. People in a state of created ignorance put down events and occurrences that have brought great disruption to our way of life as simply caused by time. Time changes things, they will tell us, attributing changes to natural causes. It is this type of assumption that has aided the enemy. We have been profiled to think this way, and we are reaching and reacting according to profile. We need to know that nothing changes of its own volition. There isn't some mysterious force like gravity which causes far-reaching change, nor do events just happen. Men create political and economic events. Men cause change, much of it very unwelcome and unacceptable, and then either by force or by persuasion get the majority to accept their schemes. I can think of no better example of persuasion than the two world wars. The more I study the subject, the more convinced I am that not only were these two wars totally unnecessary, but they were created for specific purposes which had absolutely nothing to do with defending liberty, freedom, and democracy, as nebulous a conception as democracy is. And last but not least, it had nothing to do with patriotism. Some say that these two wars were fought to preserve Christianity. There is no greater deception than this line. If World War I and World War II were fought for the preservation of Christianity, how is it that the Antichrist state, the USSR, emerged the victor? How is it that Christian fought Christian? We are already far advanced down the road to slavery. It is not that slavery in one form or another does not already exist. It is our failure to recognize the state in which we find ourselves that is the problem. Are we free? Try building a greenhouse in your backyard. Pretty soon you will have one of the AOB, the Army of Bureaucrats, knocking at your door demanding to see your building permit. Try keeping your children out of the ramshackle, broken-down school system because you are not happy that normal standards have been abandoned in favor of avoiding, quote, discrimination, unquote, against those not equipped to be in the classrooms. Protest this very real block placed on your child's progress by, quote, democracy, unquote, and its unnatural assumptions that we are all created equal. And pretty soon you will be harried and hounded for your common sense observation and beliefs. It will not be long before another AOB member arrives and hauls you off to one of our courts run by the DOI, the Department of Injustice. More and more we are being herded like sheep and treated like slaves. Not only are we ordered to produce more, but in the manner of Pharaoh, who ordered greater production of mud bricks and then forced the slaves to collect the straw to make them, so too are we being ordered to surrender more and more of our incomes to our slave masters, while at the same time we are obliged to work harder and harder for less and less reward. If ever the law of diminishing returns applies, it is to the American worker of all classes. Have we rebelled against these shocking and disgusting inroads of our liberty? With a few exceptions, the answer is no. Is it that we lack the will to kick and fight against the diminution of our liberty? Again, the answer is no. How then has it been accomplished? The answer is through gradualism, Fabianism, if you prefer that label. The majority of us will rather step back than have a confrontation. We think that by so doing, we will enjoy peace and security, but we are wrong. In the days of Shaka Zulu, a brutal murderer and king of the Zulus, a supposed enemy who could not be confronted directly was taken for a stroll along a crocodile-infested river. Slowly he was backed up step by step to the river, all the while lulled by friendly conversation. Then at a given signal, the king's bodyguard would rush forward and thrust the unwary victim into the crocodile-infested waters. That is what has been happening in America. Slowly but surely, we have been edged towards the gates of the slave camps. All along the way, we have been soothed and assured that this is a safe and secure pathway for us to take. When a few messengers shouted warnings, they were arrested and locked up, and in many cases murdered. Today, we are but a few short steps from the open gates of the slave camps. A short, sharp rush, and we shall be rendered helpless. When George Orwell wrote his famous novel, 1984, most people thought he modeled his book on a Soviet Bolshevik Russia, but Britain of the future was his model. Orwell, in his younger days, was a communist who fought on the side of the loyalists, doublespeak for Marxist revolutionaries in the Spanish Civil War, or the Spanish War against communism. It was only very late in life that he finally gave up on communism. What has this got to do with a cashless society? If you'll be patient with me, I believe I can show you that it has everything to do with it, just as I will show you why the one world government cannot tolerate the fact that we have a full, well-armed citizen force as yet out of their reach. The recent example of Chinese students and their supporters being mercilessly gunned down should tell us something about the great need to fiercely resist moves to disarm us, set in motion by President George Bush, who has abandoned the conservatives willy-nilly much earlier in his term of office than President Reagan did before him. The Chinese uprising had a definite connection to cash and the inability of government to control people who have cash. At the instigation of Adam Smith, King George III tried to deprive the American colonists of cash. But thank God, those men had the courage and the weapons to hit back at George III and defend their rights. President Abraham Lincoln tried to re-establish the right of the people to cash, a right which James Buchanan later sold to the alien Babylonians in our midst. And as we know, Lincoln was murdered because uncontrollable cash was and is a danger to authoritarian rule. Some time ago, a subscriber wrote to me objecting to my use of the word slave in the American context, and I'll quote what he said, "It is not as bad as all that," unquote. The trouble is that he did not appear to be able to see on down the road. Because we are still a few miles away from the open gates of the slave camps, he thinks it is not as bad as all that. It is this kind of short-sighted thinking which made it possible for the British East India Company's philosophical radicals to set up communism and capitalism. Our freedom-loving antecedents did not recognize what Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill had in mind for them. Nor when it comes will we be any better. We will be subjected to a massive brainwashing campaign that will actually convince us that a gunless and cashless society is a better society than the one we have now. We will actually believe this big lie. Some will feel uneasy, but will not resist because they do not relish a confrontation. So they will take one step backward and say to themselves, "Well, it doesn't seem as bad as I thought, and I will be on the alert, and if they try to do anything else, then I will take them on." And so step by step backward to the edge of the crocodile-infested river. The guiding hand long ago began to lead this nation down a path of no return. The problem is not that it doesn't exist, but that we can't see it amid the camouflage, little by little, very slowly and with caution, our enemy has proceeded to take from us our rights under the Constitution, until the condition has been reached where no man is secure in his person, and certainly not in his possessions and rights. The softly, softly approach is working beautifully. Our attention having been diverted by bread and circuses, the conflict which began on this earth more than 4,000 years ago was and is a deadly spiritual conflict which continues to this day. With the advent of a cashless society, that conflict will take a turn for the worse for Christian America. How have we come to this place? Largely through semantics, trickery, fraud, and deception on a broad front. Throughout it all, banking has played a large part, a leading role. Banking is recorded in the history of the Babylonians, and it is believed to have had its roots in India. Certainly the British Museum contains records of banking dating back to the Indus Valley settlements, which were there in the 3rd and 4th millenniums BC. Banking played a leading role in Babylon, ancient Crete, which is believed to be the cradle of socialism, communism, and it had a profound influence in the Bolshevik Revolution, just as it did in Plato's work in inspiring the so-called thoughts of Lenin and his Social Democratic Labour Party, Bolshevik Communists. The bankers have forged history in an unmistakable manner. They have made and unmade kings and empires, created revolutions and wars. They, the bankers, have created a class society of which Calvinism is perhaps one of the most striking examples. The creed of Calvinism is an echo of the words of Mahabharata, quote, "One who robs another of wealth robs him of his virtue as well. Poverty is a state of sinfulness. From wealth springs all religious acts, all pleasure and heaven itself," unquote. When we examine the teachings of Freemasonry and the Illuminati, we see that the foregoing applies with equal force to politics and religion, of which they are an integral part in the rituals of these secret societies. In 1912, this great country was misled and took the wrong fork in the road. Those who absconded from Washington rather than miss part of their holiday left traitors in charge of legislation that established the twin pillars of slavery under which we groan, the Federal Reserve System and the Income Tax Act. The few legislators who stayed that fateful December of 1913 to do the bidding of the forces of world revolution were in most instances word conditioned. From that fatal moment, when this nation's leaders took us down the wrong road, we have become the most completely controlled people in the world, save and except for the already enslaved people of Plato and Lenin's creation, Soviet Bolshevik Russia, in which creation the bankers played a leading role. These bankers and their political agents have so word-conditioned the majority of us that it enables them to write their own version of history without regard to the truth, so that their records of wars became the accepted truth, although riddled with falsehoods. David Rockefeller commissioned his paid prostitute historians so to write the history of the Second World War that today the vast majority of the world's population believes that the war was necessary to preserve freedom and democracy and not to make a great superpower of the USSR, the enemy of free men, especially Christian free men, the USSR. While this was going on, the politicians doing the controlling of groups themselves became controlled. I'm talking, of course, of the controlling groups such as the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the RIIA, and the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, and later the Bilderbergers and the Trilaterals, and all of those secret societies that I've mentioned in other tapes, who moved from covert Freemasonic Illuminati control to overt control. Each politician was run by a banker or a banker's surrogate, and each politician made efforts to control his particular group of people with words and condition them to vote for him. The size and extent of this control at the middle and upper level was and is the measure of power. Word conditioning had come of age. It is not the pen, but the word, which has become mightier than the sword. It went even further than that. By invisible means, power to control and influence spread, and the people, being conditioned and controlled, had their thinking confused for them. Multiple choices confronted them and made it so difficult to make the right choices, so that in the end they made no choices at all. They were then ripe to be manipulated as a group and began thinking in group terms rather than as individuals. They felt that being part of a political group was better than being on their own and doing their own thinking. The foregoing is a simplified type of explanation of the teachings which the Tavistock Institute carries out. And let it be said that the Tavistock Institute could not have come into being were it not financed and supported with unlimited money from the banker class. With this in mind, we shall proceed and see how relatively easy it has been to induce many changes in our American society, changes that were unwanted and undesirable, but which came about nonetheless. And thus we shall see how easy it is going to be for the forces of world revolution to usher in a cashless society. The bankers have taken authority over us in the same sense that Pharaoh took authority over the Israelites. Authority means power, and today government exercises power and authority over us, far in excess of that granted to them by we the people, in terms of the Constitution and the Christian Bible. From whence does the U.S. government of 1989 derive its power? Certainly not from we the people, and certainly not from the Christian biblical laws contained in our Bible. If government was limited in its powers, the army of bureaucrats, the AOB, would be one-tenth of its present size. Instead of telling government what to do, we have been word-conditioned to such an extent that we meekly stand back and permit government to tell us what to do. The roles have been reversed, and we haven't as yet recognized the danger we are in, nor have we risen up en masse to demand that this unconstitutional state of affairs be ended. Gradually, we are being edged closer and closer to the crocodile-infested river. At the right moment, when we have been disarmed in a cashless, gunless society, we shall be rushed into the water. The role of the bankers in a cashless society is all important to the success of the plan. Bankers are guilty of a great deal more than we would suppose. Let us again take a little time to look at their earlier history. Elements of the secret societies who formed our Begenism and the Bogomils, who reached Western Europe from the Near East and India, were introduced to powerful bankers. Brijkishore Bhargava's book, The Indigenous Banking in Ancient and Medieval India, tells us this, as does Spencer's Encyclopedia of Occultism. A good example of how banks influenced political events is found in the reaction of the West to the reimposition of strict totalitarianism in Poland in December of 1981. Instead of boycotting the USSR for a breach of the 1975 Helsinki Human Rights Accord, the West fell all over itself not only to continue helping the USSR financially, but even apologizing for Soviet barbarism taking place in Poland. And now, at the moment, there is another scam going on in Poland, which you, ladies and gentlemen, as the American taxpayer, will have to pick up the tab for. And let me say, this is another one of the examples of not being aware of what is going on in the world. And that is why we find ourselves in such a precarious state in America. The outcome of what took place in Poland was that we granted absolution to the criminals in the Kremlin and continued our flabby policy of appeasing communist Russia. Our excuse was that an economic boycott wouldn't hurt the USSR at all. If that were the case, then why are we helping them so much through Yustek and Wall Street? Walter Ritson, the guru of Citibank, said, and I quote, "Forcing Poland into default on loans to American banks would push the Eastern European nations into the arms of the Soviet Union," unquote. Unless we are deaf, dumb and blind, then we should say to Mr. Ritson and the bankers, haven't these nations been in the arms of the USSR since the close of World War II? Who do you think you are fooling, Mr. Ritson? To show us how powerful the banks are, the Council on Foreign Relations State Department, which is part of their empire under David Rockefeller, negotiated without the consent of we the people a secret agreement whereby we the people, the US taxpayers, ended up paying the banks the installments the Poles could not meet. Incredible? Yes, but unfortunately true. We the people had no input into this bastard arrangement. Our legislators in Washington did not consult with us to ask whether or not we would agree to pick up this huge tab. Thereby, in essence, we the people of America underwrote the ongoing repression in Poland. I mention this astounding incident to point up just how simple it is going to be for the one world government to impose a cashless society and gun control on us. And do not forget, the two are inseparable. George Kennan apologized for his criminal friends in the Kremlin, saying their action in Poland was, quote, purely defensive, unquote. And he repeated that monstrous lie when his dear friends invaded Afghanistan. Their immediate objective, said this longtime Kremlin posterior kisser, was purely defensive. This begs the question, against whom were they defensive? China, the United States, the Afghan people? What trash! Yet by and large, it was accepted by the West. A cashless society, we will be told, is of great benefit to everybody. It will prevent fraud, make it difficult for the mafia to operate, and put the drug barons out of business. This is tantamount to Kennan's infamous lie that the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan was, quote, defensive, unquote. It is on par with the coming propaganda that a cashless society will mitigate against crooks, criminals, and drug dealers. We need to remind ourselves that the criminals who forced the Federal Reserve Act through Congress said that it was designed to put an end to economic instability and would remove the shadow of boom-bust cycles and depressions. We became word-controlled, word-conditioned Americans when we accepted this, and unless we warn our people what to expect, word control will come on strong again to convince us that a cashless, gunless society is going to be a boon and not a threat to our liberty. What we need is a combination of a modern-day Moses and Aaron to put a stop to the mass warfare being waged against the American people. Read George Orwell's 1984 and Eisenman's The Lonely Crowd. The stealthy transformation of the Republic of the United States of America into a democratic, totalitarian state has got to be halted. In a republic, society is supposed to have laws which enable society to stand up to government, in plain language, to be stronger than the state. The unpleasant fact is that we have lost our republican strength to a wishy-washy form of democracy which enabled state power to saddle us with Federal Reserve banks and other institutions that limit our ability to protest. Now, government intends to saddle us with gun control and a cashless economy, and in addition, create a slave class of citizenry. I'm often asked, what is the purpose of all this? Just supposing that you are right. The purpose, ladies and gentlemen, is to gain control of the world's economy and reduce us to a servile status no better than that of the slaves of Pharaoh. We should not be so foolish as to put our trust in one or the other political party. It will make no difference who is in power. Look what has happened with Bush. He is pushing for gun control and confiscation at a faster rate than any of his predecessors, Democrat or Republican. I remind you of what happened in England when Robert Harley was chief agent for the Tories in church and state for the Land Bank scheme. The Whigs became the Liberal frontrunners for the East India Bank of England, while Harley's own party became a Conservative front. In effect, they were in cahoots with each other. The one implemented the so-called reforms and the other administered them. From being the party of Parliament, they became the King's Party. George Bush has changed the character of the Republican Party into that of the King's Party, which is to say, the Council on Foreign Relations Party. And this has been made possible through word control and word conditioning. Moses was a strategy planner, and Aaron was the great communicator who could talk rings around Pharaoh's advisors. Exodus 4:16 says, "He shall be the spokesman unto the people, and he shall be to thee instead of a mouth," that is, speak for the people, "and thou shalt be to him instead of a god." George Bush and David Rockefeller are not impressed with the power of the American people any more than was Pharaoh with his slaves. But Bush won't implement the cashless society plan until we are disarmed. We all know the consequences of people trying to fight military power with sticks and stones, first in Hungary and Czechoslovakia, and latterly in China. The jackals of the press try to tell us that George Bush is scared of the so-called new right. There is no new right. What there was of it was bitterly fragmented. It has now been taken over by Sun Yung-moon organization. We need to organize now on the right and become a cohesive right-wing group, a unified right-wing group. It was only when this happened with the slaves that Pharaoh began to sit up and take notice. We have already been programmed to accept changes almost to the point of no return. This began in the 1930s with the creation of the Tavistock Institute, and it amuses me to see how the name of Tavistock Institute is bandied about by people who know absolutely nothing of it. And I came across an instance of this in a so-called Inside report a short while ago, where the person blithely referred to Tavistock Institute. I was the first to unmask this institute in America, and I'm proud of the work that I did. The institute trained what Caesar called druids, who then fanned out as missionaries all across this land, infecting every layer of government with their viruses. Research on a personal computer type card has been going on since the 1950s, and such research is conducted at Stanford, Harvard, MIT in America. The card has already been perfected. Presently, it is being tried out in Denmark, where people are docile toward government and government changes, which are not always for their benefit. At this point, would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? The system works like this. A bank will issue a card, which is not a credit card, which bears a magnetic tape imprint of all of the details of the holder. Today, laser holograms are used for encoding, making forgery very difficult, if not impossible. The banks have left space enough for future use, which means added numerals and other encoding details. Ladies and gentlemen, I would remind you that this program is being brought to you courtesy of myself, Dr. John Coleman, 506 South Vine, Harrison, Arkansas. My work is copyright and may not be duplicated, reprinted, quoted from, or used in any way, shape, or form without my special permission. In the system operating in Denmark, the holder of such a card makes his purchase at a supermarket using his card to, quote, pay, unquote. The supermarket terminal connects with a central clearing bank terminal, which magnetically records the transaction and charges the amount of the purchase to the account of the holder of the card. Interesting things are happening. In the future, it is planned to add details such as date of birth, height, weight, fingerprint, and voice print identification to the card. The card will also carry the driver license number of the holder and a great deal more. What the holder is not told is that encoded in the card is an authorization number, which is passed through the main computer, instantly identifying the card holder and his bank account and rejecting or accepting the transaction. More is to come. In future, it will be unlawful to change banks without special permission. It will also be unlawful for banks to cash checks above a certain amount any time in a given period, probably 6 months. All attempts to cash checks will be registered and reported to, quote, the authorities, unquote. Companies will be obliged by law to pay their employees by magnetic transfer directly to the employee's bank. Cash restrictions will be so tight that it will be more trouble than it is worth to try and get cash. It will be impossible to rent or buy a house or make travel arrangements without the card. It will dominate our lives. What can we do now about the future? We can begin to save gold and silver coins, or small bars of these metals. Does gold and silver have a future in a totalitarian state? Yes, but not much of a one, except in black markets. Yet anything is better than nothing. Paper money must not be hoarded. In our new society, paper currency will be severely restricted and used only for authorized purposes. Every third month or so, all paper money will be called in and remarked by every bank in such a way that it is a new note from that day onwards. Those who refuse to bring their paper money for updating will find it valueless almost overnight. It goes without saying that all paper money brought in for remarking will of course be noted and lists of its owners passed to the controllers. A bill has already been tabled in the House calling for strict limits to be placed on the amount of cash one can withdraw from the bank. My intelligence contact told me that there is another bill pending which will make it necessary for banks to notify the DEA and the IRS of any person who consistently deposits or withdraws cash in amounts of $500 and over. Its purpose is clearly to tell us that cash is not a good thing. My source also told me that an executive order has already been prepared for signature that will place the control of currency in the hands of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, if there is the slightest sign of capital flight out of the USA. If it is your intention to repatriate your capital, then do it while the going is good. I do not advocate anything illegal, but simply seek to warn you that your right to send money abroad will be swiftly revoked, probably over a weekend, and then, of course, it will be too late. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the official in the Bush administration in charge of this, is playing a leading role in planning for a cashless future American society. Here are a few of the far-reaching statements Brzezinski is on record as making, and I quote, "America, having left the industrial phase, is today entering a distinct historical era, different from Western Europe and Japan. What makes America unique is that it is the first society to experience the future, be it pop art or LSD," end quote, and I would add to that in parentheses, "or a cashless society." Brzezinski went on to say, and I quote, "The implications of a truly new era," and in parentheses, he then discusses things like electronic banking and cash, "will require a universal intellectual elite and a world superculture produced inevitably by the network of electronic communications. It will demand creative interpreters of the new age who can develop a concept of regionalism with due deference to national sovereignty, which could be thrashed out at a special world congress devoted to technotronic and philosophical problems of the coming age." End of the quote, and I urge you, ladies and gentlemen, to carefully study these words, because there is dynamite lying in wait for us in amongst these words. And there we have it. There is to be a distinct caste system and a slave class, There is to be a cashless society with all transactions done electronically. These matters have long been in the hands of the following institutions: University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, Total Management and Behavior Research, MIT Sloan School, Total Systems Dynamic Group, National Training Laboratories, RAND Corporation, the Hudson Institute, Stanford Research, Institute for Social Research, Center for Advanced Study in Behavioral Sciences. This total project is being conducted under the watchful eye of the mother of them all, the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, founded in 1947 with direct linkage to all of the above and funded by the British government and the Rockefeller Foundation. Other institutions include the Science and Policy Research Unit, SBRU, and the Survey Research Center, SRC, whose purpose was and is to prepare for what it calls future-oriented research in social control and manipulative techniques in policy planning, end of the quote. The Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan puts techniques developed at SBRU into a United States context. ISR conducts its own research, a massive action-oriented psychological study of every aspect of life in the United States of America. And please, ladies and gentlemen, I must protect myself. So many people are copying my work and claiming that they were the originators and the people who exposed all these names. None of these names were known to anybody on the right wing before I disclosed them. I've been allowing people to get away literally with murder in copying my work and speaking up as though they were the ones who did all the research, and I'm not going to do it any longer. The Institute for Social Research is directly linked with the National Institute for Mental Health, also funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. It is a key institution in Tavistock's network, working on people control, and intelligence reports I received show that one of the subjects it is researching is, quote, human behavior in a cashless society, unquote, and which became the basis of this message. The National Training Laboratories is working on a similar project and is intent on putting as many key leaders of our society through what it calls training sessions, that is to say, brainwashing them to guarantee that the recommendations made by Tavistock and its American network of institutions are carried out by banks, corporations, industry, and government. From 1950 until today, in 1989, the majority of the nation's corporate heads, banking, government, and even the military have been, quote, processed, unquote, by the National Training Laboratories. The National Training Laboratories became a direct educator for the National Educational Association, and no wonder that our school systems have gone to hell. Thus, the ground has been very well prepared for the seeds of a cashless, gunless society. We are deluding ourselves if we think that when it comes, there will be strong resistance to this latest people control measure. There will not be. Who resists it will be in the minority. A National Training Laboratory manual describes its Tavistock modeled course in group dynamics as follows, quote, this model provides participants with opportunities for increasing their understanding and awareness of group processes, with particular emphasis on increasing their understanding and awareness of covert dynamics which occur in groups with regard to the issues of authority, leadership, and fellowship. To continue the quote, the learning focus is upon groups rather than individual personalities. This perspective is emphasized in order to facilitate a new understanding of institutions, organizations, and communities. The focus of the staff is upon the major problems of group life, those encountered in the exercise of authority based upon competence, power, or both. It is assumed that people who understand something about the nature and the exercise of their own authority as well as others are thereby equipped to deal more effectively with these issues. End of the quote. Now that was taken from a National Training Laboratory manual, which I have, and which I think would be a future shock to this organization if they knew that I possess it. What the foregoing jargon means is that when the question of complete gun control and complete cashlessness is brought up, a host of previously trained, quote, experts, unquote, will appear on TV talk shows and discussion groups and convince the majority of our people that these controls are necessary and desirable, just as they did in the case of the murder of the innocents, the millions of unborn children who are being murdered in their mother's wombs. The program has already been worked out. The experts I've just mentioned will convince us of the tremendous saving in costs of printing and reprinting paper money, of the countless man hours spent in counting it, the threat of counterfeiting. We will be told that a no-cash society will put the overlords of the drug trade out of business and that street dealers will disappear from the scene. We will be told how crime-free our society will be without guns and how the murder rate will drop in a most dramatic fashion. Guns kill will be everywhere. To own a gun will make one a social outcast. There will be TV media events showing thousands of good citizens turning in their weapons. We shall see a huge pile of handguns being crushed by bulldozers. A very strong guilt complex will be instilled into our people. I speak with authority because I have glimpsed the plans for the future which the National Training Laboratory manual has laid out, and these things are very definitely coming. As there is a definite limit to how much of this propaganda we can withstand, the pressure will mount until that limit is quickly reached. Long-range penetration strain will take hold of us, as Dr. Kurt Lewin, the scientist who developed this technique, explains. Quote, our failure to isolate and understand the underlying reasons for this change will cause maladaption. End of Lewin's quote. In plain language, the majority will accept these horrific abridgments of our liberty as necessary for the common good, when in fact the opposite is the case. The institutions and the people I have named, which were not known before I began my series of messages here in the United States, were given unlimited powers over the American people, and they have used it to destroy the fruits of the American Revolution. John Rawlings Reese, Richard Crosman, Eric Trist, H.V. Dix, Willis Harmon, Charles Anderson, and dozens of others, too numerous to mention by name, conspired against the American people to diminish our national will to resist changes that we know are not in our best national and personal interest. And these are names that few people, if any, knew about before I began my series of tapes and other messages in the United States. And I say this, ladies and gentlemen, because I've been badly hurt by people who are using these names for their own gain and their own benefit, as though they've known about these people all the time, when in fact they have taken this information from my tapes and manuscripts and have failed to give me the credit for the research. Brzezinski has made many statements about the society the one world government has planned for us. It will, said Brzezinski, be a society increasingly unlike any of its predecessors, a technotronic society that could easily become a technotronic dictatorship, characterized by an information revolution, cybernetics, amusement focus, with spectator spectacles providing an opiate for the increasingly purposeless masses. Brzezinski goes on to say, and I quote, the challenge, it seems, involves twin dangers of fragmentation and social control. The next phase may be one of sullen withdrawal from social and political involvement, a flight from social and political responsibility. Political frustration could increase the difficulty of internalizing rapid environmental changes, thereby increasing psychic instability. At the same time, the capacity to assert social and political control of the individual will vastly increase. It will soon be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date complete files containing even the most personal information about health or personal behavior of a citizen, in addition to the more customary data. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. End of quote. What Brzezinski wanted is now a reality. The control card to be used in an upcoming cashless society has already been perfected. It is only a matter of time and conditioning and word control before these things are implemented. The need for gun control by the authorities now becomes obvious in the light of the information that I have just provided. Brzezinski also foresaw an elitist ruling class, a lower order bureaucracy, and a distinctive slave class. And I quote him, "Finally, looking ahead to the end of the century, the possibility of biochemical mind control and genetic tinkering with man, including eventually the creation of beings that will function like men and reason like them as well, could give rise to the most difficult questions. The instantaneous electronic intermeshing of mankind will make for intense confrontation." And in parenthesis, let me say, ladies and gentlemen, that naturally without cash and without guns, we shall be helpless. Straining social and international peace, there could well be a three-way split into rural backward, urban industrial, and technotronic ways of life. That is to say, the three classes, rulers, bureaucrats, and slaves. To continue with Brzezinski, the implications of a truly new era will require universal intellectual elite and a world superculture which will inevitably be produced by a network of electronic communications, end quote. And Brzezinski then called for a special world congress devoted to technotronic and philosophical problems of the coming age. End of Brzezinski's quote. The use of the word sullen is interesting. The slaves of Pharaoh were sullen because they hated a life they could not change. In the new era of a cashless, gunless society, we are profiled as sullen for the same reason. That is to say, without these resources, cash and guns, we will be helpless to do anything meaningful to resist the slave masters. What about genetic tinkering and the creation of new beings? Is this science fiction? Absolutely not. These experiments are being conducted right now, and Brzezinski only wrote in a prophetic style so as not to alarm the public. He knew when he was writing these words that institutions conducting such experiments were in existence and were already working on what he called genetic tinkering. New genetic information makes it possible to tinker with mankind. Human hereditary factors can and are being tampered with. In 1962, two brothers, Watson and Crick, received the Nobel Prize for their work in DNA research. This type of research has proliferated to an alarming degree and now takes in molecular biology and manipulates genes which will enable a new man to be created. Scientist Joshua Lederberg says cloning is already being done with animals, and I suspect with people too. It won't surprise me if it comes any day now, but it certainly will come within the next 15 years. End of Lederberg's statement. In the USSR, scientists have long been experimenting with various body organs, learning how they work. Stanford and its sister organizations are doing the same kind of research. The brain and its sensory qualities are receiving special attention. The day is soon coming when a simple injection will alter the brain to work in whichever way it is deemed desirable by our slave masters. This opens wide the door to making a huge slave population group that will never ever be able to change its status. Slaves will then give birth to slaves. The apple will never fall far from the tree. The black races, or what is left of them, after AIDS and bubonic plague has done its work, will be eliminated or kept for the most menial of tasks. I have seen a copy of a report which details the things I have just mentioned, and it is very frightening. I speak from first-hand experience. I have seen these reports. There is a biological revolution going on, but we are not aware of it. Our attention is being distracted by a campaign to stop medical laboratory experiments with live animals. We have people running all over the world throwing red paint on fur coats. And the thing about it is that not one of them will turn their attention to the mass murder of the unborn in the wombs of the mothers that is raging out of control in America. The biological revolution mentioned by Dr. Hafez of Washington State University includes experiments with frozen embryos, or embryos if you like, which will be purchased and sold like any other commodity, and future mothers will be able to place their order subject to strict specifications. Dr. Daniel Petrucci, a noted scientist in this field, says it will soon be possible to raise children born outside of the womb. Imagine the controls and brainwashing that can be applied to such a being. Selective breeding, the very thing we condemned Hitler for, will be the order of the day. What blacks remain in the world will be used to forcibly mate with whites to produce a docile hybrid race. What can we do about keeping our guns? I suggest that those of you who are concerned enough, and who would not be after viewing the wholesale slaughter of Chinese students in Beijing, should begin now to store weapons and ammunition. If your state already makes it difficult for you to obtain a firearm, then go to Louisiana and buy all you need, without any questions and without restrictions or registrations. And let me be careful to add that I do not advocate breaking any of the existing laws of the United States of America with regard to gun ownership. Find out what these laws say before you take any action. Lay up your stock of defensive weapons against the evil day. As far as I know, there is as yet no law against this, but do it soon. FEMA could change all that in a twinkling of an eye. We must not be sanguine about the situation. Under the administration of George Bush, gun control will take a giant leap forward. So prepare now. Lay up your stocks of defensive weapons. I pray that they will never be needed, but we need to take out an insurance policy just in case. The question most ask me is this: why would Rockefeller and all the wealthy people want to cooperate with the USSR? And if they are, why are they doing it? The answer is that the elite mentioned by Brzezinski have studied the philosophy of communism, and they feel that communism cannot be stopped. Therefore, they say, the only way to survive is to join with the Kremlin in an organization that will jointly rule the world, the one world government. Why can't communism be stopped? First, there is the question of will. It was the elite and their Wall Street banks who pulled down Christian Russia and put Lenin in power. They have an enormous investment in Soviet Bolshevik Russia. Secondly, unlike Hitler, the Soviet aim is world conquest. Democracy, which has been forced on America, is built to fail. It is built to fail. By its very nature and structure, it cannot defend itself against communist propaganda, and it's shameful for free people to defend themselves according to the tenets of democracy. And in this, the jackal Western press gleefully joins in. Then there is Christianity, which is a constant buffer against Soviet exploitation. As an enemy of communism, Christianity must be destroyed, and the elite, who profess to be Christians but who are not, have decided that Christianity will be defeated and destroyed. Only massive capitalist investment by the elite keeps communism alive, and thereby chokes republicanism with democracy and its false promises of equal status. The West never gives up on the theory that communism must be appeased, and papers over the fact that in its 71 years of existence, the Bolsheviks succeeded in producing nothing but shortages. It is fatal to apply democratic logic to communism. The aim of communism is world domination and every other philosophy, and cannot change until every other philosophy has been destroyed. Communism will go on and on. Because every state on the borders of the USSR is an enemy, the Soviet borders have to be expanded and nation swallowed up or neutralized, also known as Finlandizing or conditional liberty, of the kind that faces all of Western Europe following the abject capitulation of Ronald Reagan and the signing of the INF Treaty. Since 1921, the Soviet Bolsheviks' clearly stated goals have never been moderated or recanted, Gorbachev or no Gorbachev, nor will they ever be. The Soviet Union is determined to win. The Council on Foreign Relations and its cohorts believe the Soviet Union will win. That is why they decided to join forces with it. They did so because they know that democracy does not have the ideology to make it victorious over communism. So we cannot win by the triumph of our system over that of the communists, and that is the basis of their logic. What is left? A war with the USSR? That is unthinkable, and in any case, thanks to widespread massive treachery from within our gates, which democracy by its very nature allows to flourish, we have become militarily inferior to the USSR. So in the modern vernacular, if you can't lick them, join them. The rule in the art of governing, according to my political science training, is to accept the verdict of reality. Hence our Western elitists have sold us out to the proposition of a power sharing one world government partnership with the USSR. A cashless, gunless, slave mentality American people is a necessary prerequisite to the coming of that event. Thank you for listening.